Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. On today's show, I'll be talking about working with Frank on the Salon episode of Interior Design Masters, and I'll be interviewing Jordan and Russell, the influential interior designers from 2LG Studios. Thank you for listening to the TV Carpenter Podcast. This is a podcast where I, Wayne Perry, interview all my friends, people I've worked with on all the interior design and garden makeover shows. I'll be introducing you to amazing interior designers, to garden landscapers, colour psychologists, all with the aim really of encouraging you and empowering you to create your dream home. I want to say a huge thank you to Thorndown for sponsoring this podcast. Now, I've worked with Thorndown quite a lot over the years on various makeover shows, particularly garden makeover shows. And their paint is brilliant. It's eco-based, so it's a great water-based eco paint. And it can be used on woods, internal woods, external woods, on plastic, on metal. But one of the amazing things that they have is peelable glass paint. It was really lovely a couple of weeks ago over the summer. Me and my daughter, we decided to create a bit of a stained glass effect out in the garden. We had this huge mirror and we wanted to create and draw a load of pictures on there. And they have some amazing colours. They're named things like Goblin Green or Mermaid Blue or Ogre Orange. So it's perfect for kids. And we had just fun creating interesting designs. But what's interesting, if you don't like the design, you can literally peel it off. You start to rub it and it comes up a bit like a face peel. It just pulls away and then we could create more. So you could use it on windows, on greenhouses, mirrors, jam jars, even ceramic tiles. What's great, it can be used inside and outside. So we've even left that mirror outside in the garden and it's still looking great a couple of months later. And it's made from 100% recycled plastic resin. So it's brilliant for the environment too. Don't forget, if you want discount, you can go to thorndown.co.uk, and if you put in the code TV Carpenter, you'll receive 15% discount on all online purchases. This week on Interior Design Masters, we were in, was it Whitstable? Seaside Resort. We were making over salons and I was paired up again with Frank. It was fun. It was a tricky build because with the nature of salons, you're dealing with electrics, with water. And then he wanted the whole floor re-laminating. So we had to replace the whole floor. So we had to take everything out to replace the floor. And there was a step in it as well. So we had lots of step issues. And then he had all this tiled. You saw those purple tiles, which were really interesting because originally when he told the tiler, he said, yep, it's just two sides. But in true Frank style, he pushed a little bit. So in the end, we created little pocket windows and that had to be accommodated. And so I had to plasterboard a whole wall in preparation for the tiler to come. And then the tiler had to come and do the basket weave effect and tile inside these little pockets, round stuff. Which obviously meant time-wise, with 2-3 days, you don't really get enough time to do all of that and the floor. And then had lots of electrician issues. And the electrician, we all, for us, electricians particularly, we always use local trades. We don't have an in-house electrician. So we have to find a local trade to come and do it. Now, this guy wasn't a great electrician, but he loved the camera. So he had a habit of talking lots, and he hung around a lot and made mountains out of molehills, which is kind of interesting. I think that's why these shows use people like myself, who are used to TV, and the decorators who are used to working in a TV environment, because we know what needs to be done in the time frame. So sometimes when we get external trades coming in, they kind of work on their own kind of chilled, flexi time, which is fine in everyday life. But if you're chargeable per the hour, as this guy was, and he was just dragging things out, and poor Frank, but I think he even said it on camera. He was like, right, okay, now, loving your work, but can you do one now? Because I can't afford you. And we were all secretly smiling inside because we'd all been thinking it. But yeah, so it meant that Frank's budget was really, really squeezed to the point that we had no beading trim on any of the laminates. And there's a moment where me and Frank are sitting down, and they didn't show it, but we both had a bit of a Frank conversation going, you know, do we have any budget for any beading? No. Okay, so the trim around the laminate's not going to be shown. Do we have any edging strips for the step? No, can't afford it. So it was frustrating for us as builders, because you can't finish anything. But Frank was caught, you know, between a rock and a hard place of trying to finish it. And I've never seen him so stressed, to be fair. And he even showed on the camera, he was going, you know, I'm normally finished well ahead of time. I can't believe I haven't finished. Considering the first ever episode we did together, you know, we were ironing bedding on the second day, you know. But he pushed himself, to be fair. He really went out of his comfort zone, and he pushed himself to the max. And he totally changed everything, you know, the floor, the lighting. You know, there was plumbing issues involved, you know, all the tiling. And it looked great. And the barbershop owner loved it. And it looked amazing. And I was really pleased when he went through. Gutted, obviously, that Zhu left. We love Zhu. She was so adorable. But even herself, I think she ran out of steam a little bit on that episode, and it was tricky for her. But out of the three, I think the right person went home. And now we've got the final. We have Cassie in the final. Her salon, by the way, looked beautiful, she was very lucky, you know. And it was the first time I'd ever seen her get emotional. She was very lucky in that, you know, going, well, this is my style, and if I don't get through on this, then there's nothing more I can do. This first time we've probably seen her get a little bit teary. And she, you know, she made it work. She pulled it together with all the gold gilding, and, you know, there was the greens, whether you like the green or not. There was an element of class about it, and it worked for her. That space looked brilliant. So it's Frank and Cassie in the final. And it's going to be a good one. It's lots goes on in the final, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a shame that the show ends, but we'll see what you all think next week on next week's episode when we discuss the winner of Interior Design Masters. I'm so pleased that on my podcast today, I've got Jordan and Russell from 2LG Studios, formerly the Two Lovely Gays. Now, these guys are one of the most influential interior design duos that are out there. I've known them for about 5-6 years. Jordan was the runner-up on the first ever series of the Great Interior Design Challenge. And on that series is the first time I'd ever worked on a TV makeover show. So we've been in this industry round about the same time. And they live literally 5 minutes from my house. They're friends of my wife and I. They've been round to us for dinner. And I wanted to get them on the podcast. Mainly, yes, they're amazing interior designers. And if you ever follow them on their Instagram, 2LG Studios, you'll see the amazing things they do. When I chose to interview them, I chose not to ask necessarily about their interior design process, but what it takes to become an interior design company and all the little things that go along with it, you know, in social media, or the collaborations that they work with, and how, who they've met and how they've got to where they've become, which I think is one of the most influential interior design teams that are out there. They're fresh. So I hope you enjoy this. Buckley, their little dog, to keep him quiet, we had to give him a chew stick. So he's sitting on their lap chewing this chew stick. So you might hear him chomping away, and he has a little barking bit going through, but it just adds to it. We're in their beautiful home in southeast London, chatting about all things interior design. Hello, Jordan Russell.
Hi.
Hello, of the 2LG Studios. Thanks for doing the podcast.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having us. No, it's all right. I'm trying to work out how long it was since we met. Was it 5 or 6 years ago on the Great
Must be nearly
challenge?
Six
Must
now.
Must be nearly, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, nearly 6 years.
Yeah.
Since what is it now?
Well, our business is 5 years old, so we did the show the year before we launched the business.
So it must have been 2013, the show. Must have been.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know.
It feels so long ago, but what's really interesting is the fact that in 5, 6 years, you guys have created the 2LG Studios, which is, you're like the influencers. I think you're one of the big influencers in interior design. Can you believe how far you guys have come in that time?
A big sigh.
Well, it's so weird because at the same time, like, it feels like yesterday, but then also it's been not a long slog, but we've been grafting for 5 years, haven't we?
Yeah, it has been incremental. It's definitely been like a long grind.
Yeah. Well, so people still say, you just like appeared out of nowhere and made this massive splash. And I'm like, doesn't feel like we appeared out of nowhere. I felt like we've just been like heading towards this point for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So I guess when you're in it, you don't necessarily notice it so much.
We have this thing at the end of every year where we do like a best
bits. A list.
We make a list of all of the best bits and the kind of most creative moments and our least favourite moments. And then we try and kind of readdress that in the year that's coming and go, okay, let's do less of those less favourite moments and let's do more of these moments. And so each year we try and kind of refine.
Which is really
what
nice because it makes you stop and take stock of your successes and whatnot.
Because we never
really
do
nice
that.
Today.
A lot of us don't do that.
No,
stop
no.
And go, actually, what I've achieved.
Yeah. And look, again, because when you're in the thick of it, you know, things are stressful or the short time scales or whatever it may be. So actually to stop and look at them all on paper and write a physical list, because nobody writes anything down.
Well, it's not a very British thing to do, is it? I mean, people say that a lot, but it's not like, oh, look at my achievements. Like, it's not,
it's not
people
for anyone
don't like
else.
To do that, do
they?
It's
for us, isn't it? It's not for anyone else.
It's more so that we can, like, assess the things and work out which direction to go in and, like, what's working and what isn't working. And
The
balances, because I think when, you know, I do lots of different things, as you guys do. And when you start, you kind of say yes to everything. You know, like, well, I'll do that publication, I'll do that. And, yeah, they won't pay me a bit, or give me that. Do you know what I mean? So now, like you're saying, you've got to a point. You know, can you? What have been your wins this year? What are you the most pleased with?
Gosh, it's not the end of the year,
I think this year's been one of those, almost like we have these hibernation years. I mean, it sounds silly to that because obviously we're on social media all the time, but sometimes there are years where you're putting things into the pot and you're working really hard to kind of pack that one away for when it's ready to come out. And
I think that
we've done
working with Urquhart this year was huge for us.
Yes. Yeah.
A brand that we really love, and it was around Pride, which is again something that, you know, is hugely important to us. So to do that charity work and the design project with Urquhart was really exciting. Also the V&A, we did a big project with the V&A where we styled five, six, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Different sets. We designed different sets for them to include all of their products. So they do like rugs, wallpapers, fabrics, sofas, all sorts of things. So that was really great because they're two massive institutions that we both revered for a long time.
And also we've just designed a show flat for quite a prominent developer, which is new territory for us. So that was a bit of a milestone of like
something totally different.
We'd set our sights on wanting to do something like that, but it just happened to come up this year and we jumped on it. And so we've just finished installing that. So it's not been released yet, but that was a really lovely one, wasn't it?
And then we've just done some work with Sunday Times Style, which came out today, which was really cool. So we've ticked off some really nice projects this year.
Because when you first started, like when we did GIDC, I think you'd styled one hotel. You know, the whole idea of you had the amateurs, don't we? But you'd done a little bit. And then, so did you always want to go into interior design full-time? Is that the main thing you wanted to do?
I think we'd come from, as you know, an acting background, and then as a hobby, textile design. So we knew that we wanted to work in design, didn't we? But
we didn't have a plan, probably the short answer. We wanted to do something creative. We had started to design textiles, and it was kind of, we were just feeling our way, weren't we? Mm. And we had ignited something in each other that wasn't acting. Mm. And so we were just trying to kind of explore that and see where it took us. And I suppose a lot of that fell into place after GIDC, the show that we did with you. Yeah. And I was just on the sidelines cheering on and then coming in and helping in the final. But I think that sort of crystallised a lot of the ideas and was just like, actually, we can do this. Let's like really focus our minds.
Mm. Starting the Instagram and social media and all of that was a real... Well, it was our only marketing tool.
Yeah.
We didn't have a marketing budget. We were just starting out. So I think we got in at the right point with Instagram, which is the main platform that we use.
Oh my God, when I think about back to some of the posts that we used to do back in the day, even just 5 years ago, it was such a different platform.
But what's really interesting, I remember we were on the final of the... I keep wanting to say all the different interior design shows that I've the Great Interior Design Challenge GIDC, and we all went to Dan Hopwood's studio to watch the final live.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I got a taxi there with you, and I remember sitting there, and the final was on, we were watching on a big screen, and you two were on your... At the time, I was going, they're on the blinking phone, like, they're missing it. What's the matter with them? And I remember thinking, you're missing this amazing opportunity.
Already seen it.
But you've already seen it. We knew who was.
We'd had a DVD.
Yeah. But what was amazing in your side, like you say, you caught the social media before everyone realised how important social media was. Mm. So you guys were in Twittering with people at the same time and engaging with people. So the whole social media thing for you guys really took off from there. Do you think that's been the main influence for your business growing?
We've tried to make it a sort of fun thing.
Part of our lives.
Good thing is it never felt like a chore, and the social media thing was just genuinely, we just did really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of steered clear of things that we don't enjoy as much as possible. And so the social media side of it, we always make it a part of our day. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, now we've got to do our social media. It's never been that for us, luckily. And I think we've just always integrated it into everything that we do.
We're both quite chatty, gregarious people that like to engage with other people. Mm-hmm. So it just felt really natural. And we always say, if it feels like work, you shouldn't do it anyway. If you can't think of something to post or you're struggling to, don't bother, step away. Do you know what I mean? So we've not really ever had issue with that, have we? I think it was an important part. I think we knew that it was going to be a way to talk to people, to get the message out there. Mm-hmm. At the same time as writing as well, Russ did an English degree. Before we went to the Royal Academy.
You're clever.
Do you know what I mean? He's looking at words, this one.
Whatever that means.
No, it just means, it just means all of his mates are in like publishing or they're all writers. So we had loads of friends in different places that we could pull on. So, you know, we got ourselves a column at the Gay Times, for example, which was super niche, perfect for us. They didn't have an interiors page necessarily at that point. So we did that for a couple of years, which was another marketing tool. It was another way of us getting our autonomy out there.
Well, it was literally, we didn't have any funds to start our business. Mm-hmm. So we were starting from ground zero. We had nothing. And so it was a case of, this is the only option we have. Yeah. We've got to make this work. And we've got to hustle and get the interest. And it just so happened at that exact point, social media was dawning. And, you know, that opened up all sorts of possibilities for loads of people. And I think at the time, it annoyed a lot of people in the design world because...
Really?
Ruffled some feathers just because we were different. We came from a different background. We appeared. We made a lot of noise. We had a lot of
success. Well, and there's an element of mystery to design and interiors, particularly that there's this kind of little black book, and you don't give away your secrets, and you don't share your suppliers. And obviously, social media is the antithesis of that. It's here. It all is. This is what we're doing.
This is how we're doing it. So you can get this and this.
Buy it now. Yeah. And that's just completely against everything that was the old school interior design scene. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it was just a whole different, fresh approach. And I think it was, we didn't necessarily know any other approach, so we were just doing our thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And And now, with, you know, everything is online, you can find anything you want. So there's no point trying to be mysterious because it's all out there.
Yeah.
So we're not selling mystery.
Yeah.
When you guys first started, you know, you named yourself like the Two Lovely Gays,
mm-hmm.
and that came from your postcard, wasn't it?
It was what our friends called us. Yeah, it was our pal, someone I went to drama school with, coined it, didn't he? And mm-hmm. Postcode was SE232LG.
Uh huh.
And he used to call us the Two Lovely Gays, and that it just caught on amongst our friendship group. And then when we came to name the business, we were like, oh, yeah, it's a home, our postcode, da, da, da. Shall we do this? Is this mad?
And then your aunt said, you can't, it's awful, you mustn't. And then
I think a lot of people said that as well.
But that's why, because for me, looking back on the outside, looking in, it was kind of, I can't believe they call themselves the Two Lovely Gays, but not in a thing, just where that's crazy, you know, and in a fun bubblegum way. But then what I liked is about 2-3 years ago, you kind of got serious, and you kind of, I remember you saying, we're relaunching, we're rebranding, we're 2LG Studios.
Finally got some money to build a new website.
I think, but that shows adaptability. Like you said, you made that splash, you were fun, you were different, but then you kind of had to then compete with the big boys in a different way and prove your worth.
We had to diversify a little bit, because with the studio group, we do have people working with us, and also we found that we were going to meetings and people wanted the Two Lovely Gays at everything, which just isn't
possible. Sometimes you've got to divide and conquer.
A lot easier as 2LG Studio. One of us can turn up and one of us can go to this and one of us, and we can divide and conquer, and it's so much easier. But Two Lovely Gays is still alive and well, and we've got like a lifestyle fashion new version of Two Lovely Gays, haven't we? That is quite nice, because it's kind of like going back to our roots and being able to be a bit fresher and more open with it.
It's more about us and our personalities, whereas 2LG Studio is very much about our work and the work that we do now. So it's it's been a really fun journey. It's been hard
but
work,
also I would say but... that you've touched on that idea of this kind of fun, playful, sort of cute approach of Two Lovely Gays, and the word lovely specifically was really important to us, because I think it can be seen as soft or a bit nice, and we wanted to show that nice can be excellent as well. And so it was almost a Trojan horse of like, yes, we're nice and we're lovely, and you oh, hello Buckley, that's Buckley, our dog, in the background.
He's been chomping in the background.
Yeah, you could probably hear the chewing all the way through. You're like, what was that?
He's just finished chewing, and now he's got a toy. Let's bring that over here.
Bring that here, Buck, and I'll hold that. You tug it in the background. He's just got
And Buckley is a dash...
Dachshund.
He's got his own Instagram. We'll add that to the notes.
Buckley,
the wonder dog.
And so the whole lovely thing is a bit of a Trojan horse. It's kind of cuteness and kindness and niceness can be a way of getting stories told in a different way that don't often get highlighted.
Well, we always say we don't take ourselves that seriously, but we take our work very seriously.
But that's proved that with like the high-end collaborations you do.
Yeah, working with someone like Ligne Rosé, who are like worldwide.
Who's that?
The French furniture company, Ligne Rosé, who we...
They're famous for the Togo sofa, which is has become like a classic kind of...
Yeah, and we were still Two Lovely Gays when we worked with them. That was... They approached us, LDF... Three or four years ago, to create a reimagining of their slice chair by Pierre Charpin, which had never been touched by another designer. Sort of, so we developed a fabric collection with Custom, who were based in Peckham, now live in Forest Hill near us. We developed a print collection of wallpapers and fabrics for Ligne Rosé that we launched at LDF. Then we took it out to New York the year after. So it's like, you know, to be approached by a brand like that that's world renowned, you know, super serious, high-end design stuff was, it was amazing.
That's all down to Robert Hasty. If you're out there, Robert.
Yeah.
He's like a lovely man who runs the UK branch of Ligne Rosé, and he's, he's just fantastic.
He's a mastermind.
Very open to newness.
Because it sounds like you've had a few, you know, influential people. I remember at the end of GIDC, like Dan Hopwood kind of took him under his wing and took him to Milan. And I remember when you first guys were going, I remember that thing of, I don't know, I think you mind me saying, we can always cut it out of podcast, but you were going, I've been told to get a new wardrobe, we're skinny.
Oh my God, it was so exciting.
You said you've got to look better than you are. I mean, so tell us about that whole process and what Dan did for you. Did he make you join certain things?
We love Dan. Dan, I always say this, I'm sure he hates it. He was like our Mr. Miyagi, so I have to ask it for But he really was. He was really.
He's a lot younger than Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah,
very handsome. Very handsome.
Much better looking. But he was so supportive and open and welcoming. You know, he was at the time he was president of the BIID.
Yeah.
I know he's still involved heavily in president what they do. And he took us under his wing. He got us signed up. As you say, he took us out to Milan for the first year.
Took a bank loan out to do it.
No, it's not me. Literally, the wardrobe changes were ridiculous. Now we just wear like the same pair of trainers every day, don't we? Because it's a lot of walking.
Yeah, the first year was just all blisters.
That's not even true. I get a whole new wardrobe every day.
So what was the so going out to Milan? Why do you go out to Milan, and what do you see when you're out there?
It's just a global view of what's happening in the design world. So obviously London has a particular slant and a particular take, and the Milan design scene.
Whole world comes to Milan basically for a week in April, and all the new launches happen, new collections, new designers showing things. It's like the broadest collective.
Well, it is officially the biggest design show on the planet. So, I mean, it's where everybody shows first.
They have a place, Salone del Mobile, which is in like a... I would say it's like 10 Earls Courts all lined up together. It's ginormous. It's like 29 halls.
Yeah, the first year we took it upon ourselves. Well, Dan took it upon himself that he was on a mission to show us all of it just so that we knew, and we never went and saw it ever again.
No, you just go to like Hall 9,
it's so big.
23 and 24, then you go somewhere else.
There's one section called the Classico section, isn't there, which is just like horrendous.
I mean, everyone should see it once, but then it's like, you know, it's like...
I've been to Blackpool, don't let's go there.
Well, it's like...
It's the opposite of that. It's like... Tortoiseshell spoons with like a peacock's eyeball that's £27,000 that no one needs or should ever buy. But it is that like obscene, isn't it?
Did you now get asked to go to certain halls or see certain?
I mean, last year we were actually taken to Salone del Mobile as guests of Milan Design Week, which was amazing and a real privilege. You know, there was a fancy dinner and they flew us out, put us in a lovely hotel and sort of. So I think, you know,
but again, Milan wasn't being covered on social media by anybody.
No, not at all. And in fact, I remember an interior designer we met at a party once said to us, "Why do you go to Milan? What's the financial return? What's the direct return to your business from going out and spending all that money and going to Milan?" And I was so gobsmacked by it because I was like, it's not about that. It's about filling your creative pool and knowing what's out there so that we can offer our clients the best, the most unusual collection of works from around the world. Do you know what I mean? I
think it's a bit like saying to an actor, why do you go to Broadway and see shows?
Yeah, or why do you read a book?
I love it. Yeah. And it makes me excited again to be doing this.
Reinvigoration.
Yeah.
And actually, it's really... good point that you just said, sort of back when Dan first took us out there, it wasn't being covered really by that many people. There wasn't a lot of...
Well, it was still a secret, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was still like a...
It was a secret club.
We all know.
You didn't even have to queue to get into the parties when we first started going. Now it's ridiculous, isn't it? You can sort of see people... Not that we queue. But you can see people queuing down the street.
So you're... A bit about your design style... Do you have a design style? Do you think your clients come to you because they want a certain style, or do you still flex your muscles and see when they meet you, when you meet them, you see what they want?
I think that's developed. I think when we first started, we were yes people, like you said earlier, and we wanted to do everything, and there's value in that, being a really positive force and just saying, yes, I want to make this work. And that's what we did for the first 2 years or so, isn't it? And then we sort of started to develop our own style, and then we bought this house, and this house became quite a massive force for change in our business because it was a moment for us to kind of really express who we were. And up until that point, we'd been working with clients in a very collaborative way. And
which I think we still do. I think the whole design style thing, I think, yes, we do. We like to work with colour. We use a lot of pattern. And we like to work with new, young designers and artists to commission new pieces and sort of.
I think also because we train as actors, we love to get under the skin of other people, and that's actually what makes it really interesting. And it's really nice to meet different people and try and make the best version of them in their home.
Yeah, it's not about our ego, it's about leaving our ego at the door and trying to visually translate someone else into something beautiful. Wow. I like that it's always different. We're definitely not that kind of studio that you go to for a certain look.
You're not Kelly Ump where you go for
no,
that colour.
No, definitely not.
Okay. You talked about this house, and I remember when you guys even saw this house. I think we bumped into you just after.
Yeah, because wasn't your friend trying to buy it as well? Yeah.
My friend might happen to be Bamford Bone was on the team. Nicky Bamford Bone.
Oh, is that who was trying to buy it? Oh my god,
we'd look very different. Brilliant. But I remember you guys were so excited about this house, going, "We planned our Christmas tree in the hall." Forever home. But I'm intrigued to know this house is stunning and it's styled beautifully. Like, you know, people have seen your kitchens and all of that. Do you feel a pressure to have this house styled as and looking as beautifully as it is?
God, no. Not at all. Absolutely not. I think a house, well, a home is our home, is to live in.
Do you ever worry about that, thinking they're gonna this has to be on point?
I never worry that it won't be.
I don't know where it came from, but Jordan was born with this level of confidence that I have never known.
I don't really ever think about what anyone's going to think about it. Does that make sense? I don't ever think, like, yeah, you do more so, but I don't know, I just... It's for you at the end of the day, isn't it? And we say this to our clients, it's your home, only you have to love it. Who cares what your friends think or your neighbours think or... you know, your guests that come to stay might think it's not for them, it's for you, and you're.
I also think when you're in your 30s, I mean, not to like pull the age card at all, but we bought this house at a point in our life when we were really ready to have a moment for us, and so there was a lot of freedom that came with that, and we deliberately thought, let's just relax into this and express ourselves, and it sort of happened at the right moment, I suppose, didn't it?
But
yeah,
like, you know, like you said, this house has fed your design from down to the carpet up the stairs. You know, the first person I knew put pattern on carpet stairs.
Oh my god!
Do you know what I mean? So I love the fact that you guys have just let rip, or even your kitchen. And I think I said this to you before. You guys have become influencers within the world of interior design. I think anyway, particularly something like your kitchen, which is such a design statement. Anyone who's seen any of your Instagram posts, you know, it's bright, bold, pink. Mm. Arches, and when I first saw it, and I said this to you last week, I went, "Ooh, not sure about that." Mm. Now, if I could talk my wife into having it, I'd have it in mine. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it was a speech at the Ideal Home Show last year.
Well, a Maison et Objet this year in Paris is like pink arches everywhere.
Do you actively? This is a really weird question, but did you actively want to be influencers? Is that just how? I'm trying to work that. I don't even know what the question is.
No, I don't think so. I think it just. Because actually, this is a good way of describing it. There's work that we've done that when we put it out there, it hasn't landed. And it's taken 2 years for
that
to land.
And we thought, oh my God, I'm so excited about this coming out.
Oh my God, yeah, this is the best thing we've ever done. You put it out and it sort of goes... Phew. And then 2 years later, it gets picked up. Everyone loves it. We won a Pinterest award for the project I'm speaking about. And I think that maybe is influence. I sort of hate the term. To call yourself an influencer is quite arrogant, I guess. Maybe I don't know. I guess that is the world within which we live or we found ourselves. It's definitely not what we set out to do. I think we just set out to do good work and hope that people like it. And I guess we're lucky enough now. We're not lucky enough, because I hate the word luck. It's not luck, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. We sort of got
I'm trying to go back to the beginning of things like the kitchen and trying to work out what the thought process was, but it was genuinely just creative day in the studio of us playing with different things, and like
it was born out of us generally looking for something, can't find it anywhere, and then we think, right, okay, like, how can we go about making this, or what brand or company can we work with to, on
so
a collaboration?
You went to the kitchen companies to say, or did the kitchen company come?
We designed
John Lewis, isn't it?
John Lewis of Hungerford, which is an important distinction, it's not John Lewis Partners.
So did you go to them because you couldn't find it, or did they come to you?
We designed this house when we first moved in. We wrote quite an extensive
mood boards for all the rooms.
Story, and we did mood boards, and then it was a case of trying to action that in, you know, within our means, which, you know, we didn't have a lot in the pot, so it was a case of slowly phasing it, wasn't it? And so we knew where the kitchen was going, and
we didn't know
how we were going to get there.
Yeah.
So we spoke with a couple of companies, and actually John Lewis and Hungerford was the company that were best positioned to make that shape.
But even so, with that, when they first came, they were like, why don't we just use our standard rectangular cabinets and put arch doors on it that just overshoot the top? And we were like, why?
No, 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 no. Why don't we make an arch
cabinet? That's not going to work. let's go the hard route and steam bend curved wood and did it.
But they went there, didn't they?
They went there, and yeah, we've just sold our first one in Paris. It's been installed, the kitchen's been installed in Paris, which is very exciting.
Three huge big arches,
So
and quite a lot of the freestanding pieces. The freestanding one is the one, isn't it, that is everyone loves.
And it's going to be at 100% design next week.
Yeah.
So back to you two as a design duo. I'm interested to know, you know, with any partnership, whether, you know, you guys are married, but I've got business partners, you bring different things to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm intrigued to know how you divvy things up. Like, who's...
Jordan brings all of the confidence and bravery, and I bring the detail and the thought process.
Yeah, I'm not very detailed. I'm just like, it's blue. I see blue, and Russell's like, but why? Wow. Which blue? I'm like, I don't know, it's just blue.
I'm a story person, and you're a visual person, aren't you? Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I always say as well, if we've got an hour to do the same task, I'll start working minute one and finish at minute 59 with a minute spare. Russell will think about it for 59 minutes and do it in the last minute. So we both get there. We've just got really, really different processes.
Yeah.
Quite opposing processes. You can imagine how frustrating it is. But I don't know, we make it work. It's sort of... compromise, like listening to each other, I guess.
You know, in the truest sense of collaboration, we do everything together, and we have very different takes. So it's quite takes.
Looking at taste is quite similar.
Taste is quite similar. I would say that the way of implementing that is very different. It can be quite heated, and there is a tension to working together.
I think that's why we get the best results. Going back to kinds of relationships you're in with someone you work with, I think because we're married, it does go that extra, you know, we're not scared to go there. Do you know what I mean? It gets quite heated, like you say, it can, especially if we both feel really strongly about something that we don't agree on. Mm-hmm. We can be battling things out, and you know, this might be a rug for a client or something. You think, God,
is this worth my marriage?
Is it really? Honestly, yeah. But I do believe that's why we get to the right solution. I think that's why
we've developed better ways.
Good.
We've developed better ways of understanding
why
we're not understanding each other,
like a time out.
So when you do, like, you write for the Metro, you know, so who writes those? Who, you know, do you both do them, or?
Well, we both do them, and interestingly, some of our friends will be like, I can tell when you've done it, it is quite funny.
That actually is, I don't know how that happens, it just sort of happens, doesn't it?
Depends on what we're working on in the studio at that time. And sometimes it's a case of, please, can you do it this week? I just don't have the time.
I can't think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we wrote the DIY Doers Writes for the Sunday Times, and I'm rubbish at it. I'll message Steph, we'll get the questions through, and I'll tell Steph what I'm thinking. Mm. She does all the writey side of it, but you know, I'll give my input. So it's kind of a duo, but really it's her bag. But there's certain things you know that we're good at, whereas I'll do certain social media stuff.
Yeah.
You know your strengths.
I would say I probably lead the shopping bit. Well, you need the social media as well, don't you?
Oh, God, if Russell had to write every Instagram caption that we ever did,
we'd be here all year.
Nothing would ever get posted. Because,
I don't have your...
But then I make a lot of spelling mistakes.
I have to go back.
Which is Russell's, like, worst. Oh, he's like, oh, my God, you've written the wrong there, or where, were. I'm like, oh, God.
It's like the worst thing, yeah. I once, me and Steph, my business partner for the DIY Doers, we were doing a pitch for Bosch, and I spelled Bosch wrong.
Oh, no! I know, literally had the one thing not to do.
Yeah,
not
the name of the client.
I love that.
We were sponsored by Bosch, and I spelled
brilliant.
Bosch wrong.
Oh, God.
At the end of every podcast, I always ask their dream home or something. So I want to ask Jordan, I want you to describe what you're drinking and your dream room.
What I'm drinking?
No, well, as in you could be drinking anything. This is an imaginary.
This is
like out of your head. There's no objects or whatever. It could be something you already own, it could be part of this house, or it could be just something.
Oh God, what would I be drinking?
I love it. Everyone always goes to the alcohol first.
Well, you know what? I was like, if it's the morning and I was in my dream room, it'd be a really nice, like, oak flat white. But if it was the evening, I'd definitely have a glass of red wine. But if it was the summer, I might have a rosé. What would the room be? Oh, God, who knows? I haven't created it yet. We definitely plan to build our own house. Mm-hmm. That's in our future. 100%.
Give me a style of house then. Give me, is it?
Oh, modern? God, like totally modern. I'm so over Victorian. Yeah, I don't want draft. I want insulated walls and like heat and sort of definitely super modern.
Okay.
Probably like one floor. Who needs stairs? We're all going to get old. Like,
oh my God,
I know.
You're 35.
I know. And they move the bedroom downstairs. No, I just think something like super sleek, very modern, lots of glass, maybe a bit of black rubber or something latexy. Yeah. Bit kinky.
You've been playing in your dressing room too long. Yeah,
with your latex curtain.
And Rosen, give me your same thing again, but it's a holiday home of some sort.
Oh,
I know where you go.
Well, there's two very distinct sides to my personality because I am a Gemini. One is craving like just Mauritius or some beach, some gorgeous resort, the Maldives, and just with the sea lapping underneath and, yeah, just looking up at the stars. That would be lovely right now. And then probably the other side of me is just, like, Scandinavia all the way.
That's what I thought you were going
to say. Yeah, just, like, my inner Viking just wants to see the Northern Lights and be surrounded by snow all of the time.
What are you drinking?
Well, probably a Glühwein.
Jordan Russell, it's been absolutely amazing. So, social media-wise, what are your handles and how can people look you up?
At 2LG Studio for our main account, or at 2 Lovely Gays.
Fancy a bit of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah. On Instagram, Pinterest and Twitter.
Twitter's Two Lovely Gays.
Twitter,
Pinterest is at 2LG Studio. Yeah.
And before Buckley goes crazy,
He is at Buckley Wonder Dog.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, thank you.
And here he goes.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed listening to my interview with Jordan and Russell. It's so inspiring what they've done in such a small amount of time and all those amazing collaborations. And if you ever get a chance to look again on their social media, 2LG Studio, specifically on their Instagram page, you'll really be inspired. I hope you enjoyed my talk about working with Frank again on Interior Design Masters. And don't forget, next week is the final and we get to see what he creates for his final episode of Interior Design Masters and my final episode. Remember, if you enjoyed this podcast, the TV Carpenter podcast, don't forget to like, subscribe, share, tell people about it. And as always, if you have any questions for me, you can contact me, Wayne Perry, on Instagram and Twitter. And again, a huge thank you to my amazing sponsors, Thorndown. If you get a chance to watch Alan Titchmarsh's show on Tuesday evening, we're there with Thorndown and Caroline, one of the owners of Thorndown. She's there with paintbrush in hand painting away. And you remember, you can always get 15% discount from Thorndown if you go on thorndown.co.uk and put in the code the TV Carpenter. Now, hope you're inspired. Go away, enjoy, and make your house a home. And thank you once again for listening to the TV Carpenter.